From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 27th day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, will be here to discuss yesterday's release by the United States Environmental Protection Agency of the 2019 RVO. That's the Renewable Volume Obligations as related to the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. Now, there are some things buried in there that really aren't very well liked by the ethanol industry. He'll help us understand what it all means. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and get an update on the agricultural energies with Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State University in Kansas. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson here on Illinois Public Media to take a look at the trade in Chicago. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us. We always start, you and I have, at least for the last several months, with the support and resistance levels. They keep moving around on us because the volatility is there. Can you tell me where it is today?
Yeah, there's no question about that, Todd. And with this, with these approaching reports, it's really been wild. I'm switching over to September corn today because of the fact that, you know, July 1st notice day is the end of the week. So we're going to start with September. Support 348 and a quarter, which is the recent low we just had. Resistance at 390. Going to August beans, and Augie beans basically 847 and a half for a low, 996 as major resistance. Dease corn, 360 for the low, or I shouldn't say the low, but for support, and 380 and then $4 for major resistance. November beans, 864 and a half support, $9 resistance, major resistance at 977. So you can tell that there's been a lot of activity. Anybody who looks at a chart can see what's been going on with the tariff issues and these reports coming and the crop condition reports. Is just kind of crazy.
Indeed. And then speaking of reports, we've got a couple of them due out on Friday at 11 o'clock. Folks can find the answers to the numbers at 11 a.m. Central Time on our website at willag.org. But for now, the best we can do is to take a look ahead. What do you think about the grain stocks numbers?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm hoping that they're going to come in where the average guesses are, because on corn, the average guess is about 47 million higher than last year. Beans, 240 million higher than last year. Wheat, 80 million less. So the only really positive one is wheat, at least on the projections. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, to me, the grain stocks report is much more important than the acreage report is, because yield still determines everything when it comes to acreage, where grain stocks tells us what we're actually doing, you know, what we're really moving. So It'll be interesting to see what they say.
And then you mentioned the acreage report. Expectations that USDA will add or subtract from the corn and soybean numbers planted across the United States?
Well, the average guess right now is that they're going to go up about 300,000 acres on corn compared to March, but it would still be not quite 2 million acres less than last year. On beans, compared to March, it's up about 700,000 acres, and that would still be less so than we had last year when it comes to beans. When you look at wheat, wheat would be up about 1 million acres. And the other one I like to look at is cotton. You know, cotton is going to be up about 1.1 million acres on the average guess. That would actually be about 300,000 more acres than we saw back in the March report. And so the only one that actually went down at all was wheat. On the March report, we were at 47.34 billion or million acres. They're looking at 47.15. So the switch around, of course, is coming. You know, it's the cotton acres that probably switched out and took some additional bean acres out of the picture. But we won't know that again until we actually get into this report. And when I mentioned yield, one of the things that, if you look at a one bushel change, you know, let's say on corn acres, you know, you're talking 88 million bushels. People get all excited about the actual acreage, but it really comes down to bushels. And I fear, when after looking at the crop condition ratings the other night, Todd, You know, the big five, we had Illinois at 83, good to excellent, Iowa 81, Indiana 76, Nebraska 86, Minnesota 84. Whoa, that's pretty scary. I think it could mean that when the USDA rolls around now in July, we actually might see the yield go up on corn. And the same thing on beans, Illinois 78, Iowa 79, Indiana 71, Nebraska 85, and Minnesota 79. And bean numbers are, you know, some of the highest that we've ever seen at this particular time of the year. Now, we all know that that can go south, but we also know that WASDE uses the crop ratings as a part of the way to project yields. And so I think everybody has to think about that. When we see the acreage, just be prepared that we could actually see yield increases coming down the road here.
How do you think the trade will react, or what has trade reaction, maybe better put, been in the past, or the volatility of these reports been like in the marketplace?
Well, I tell you what, on corn, this particular report is the most negative percentage-wise. 67% of the time it's been negative. When we've been positive, we've gone up 16 cents, and negative, we've gone down 16 cents. The interesting one is 2 weeks later. When we've been positive, we've gone up 33 cents. And negative down another 19 cents. So, you know, that shows you what kind of volatility goes around this particular report. When you look at the beans, now this is the 12th most negative report and the 4th most positive report. So when we've been positive, 28 cents up, 18 cents down. And then if you look 2 weeks out after the report, the positive change has been 57 cents. And if it's been negative, it's been 42 cents down on average. So wild and crazy is probably a good way to describe it.
Indeed. Hey, anything else before I let you go for the day?
Yeah, I just want to touch on Brazil and Argentina. Down in Brazil this week, I talked to Dr. Cordonier. They've moved very little product, and this is due to those freight rate rules, you know, that the government has come out with. And I'll just revisit what the rules are. If your freight rate is $200, and you find somebody who's going to haul it for $150, you're going to pay a penalty of $100. In other words, you're going to end up paying $250 rather than $150. And so the individuals who have to get grain are really not very happy. I can tell you that much. You know, it's just a very tough situation, and it continues to go on. So nobody's moving anything because they just don't know for sure if there's going to be any changes made to this situation. Brazil just, you know, they can't meet China's needs this year when it comes to beans. There's no question. South America can't meet China's needs. Last year, South America provided 58% of all of China's requirements for beans, where we provided 39%. And so there's a couple things I think that we really have to think about here. Argentina weather appears to be getting better. So even if the weather just normalizes down there, you would expect to pick up 25 million more metric tons, or 916 million more bushels. Just if they don't expand any acres, if it just normalizes itself. The other thing that we might see is we may actually see Argentina plant some more beans, because basically the government's talking about halting the reduction in the tax that they charge for exports of beans. And so that's another thing I think that has to be in the background. But the biggest thing, Todd, is the South American crop doesn't start a year from now. It starts 6 months from now in January. And so I guess what I'm the down and dirty is, make sure you have all your ducks in a row and you know what you're doing. Then let's add, you know, potential tariff issues and everything else to this. But even without all the tariff information, there's still a lot of things that you have to keep track of to be able to maximize your profits on corn and beans and wheat.
And we're glad you're helping us keep track of it here on Illinois Public Media. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vick. She is with Stuart Peterson. We're now joined by Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, to assess yesterday's announcement by the United States Environmental Protection Agency of the 2019 RVOs, or obligations, as it relates to biofuels and their use in the nation's gasoline supply. Scott, what did you find as you looked deep into the paperwork?
I think that there's two important different ways to look at the numbers in the release. The first is what was released on paper as the mandates, and they look very good in the sense of the corn ethanol mandate was kept at 15 billion gallons. The advanced mandate was increased, and also in 2020, a nice further bump up in the proposed biodiesel mandate. So those all look good. But the real action is actually below the surface. And that has to do with this issue of small refinery exemptions and how many are given, and then how they're accounted for in the future standards. That's where the real action is. It's different than in the past, where the numbers that come out on paper don't tell the whole story.
This is because the exemptions recalculate what usage has been or could be?
Right. It's a little tricky, but the key issue is first the size of the exemptions, which we don't really know exactly, but based on news reports from last week and earlier, when it was reported that the EPA was considering 1.5 billion gallons of reallocation, then that's a pretty good estimate of what the EPA was expecting in terms of the exemptions denominated in terms of number of gallons of ethanol. That would be, in 2019, potentially, a direct waiving of the mandates of 1.5 billion gallons. So it's not a small number. But that didn't have to be the case. Again, this is where you have to get further below the surface in the details. And this is the issue everyone's been talking about lately called reallocation, which in the past, it's been EPA policy that if you give those 1.5 billion gallons of small refinery exemptions today, that we would account for them in the future by basically tacking those on to the obligations of the larger refiners. So at least in year two, there wouldn't be any net loss of obligation. And that's the really big news out of this announcement, is that the EPA chose what I will call a scorched earth policy regarding reallocation of the small refinery exemptions. Not only, Todd, did they basically zero out any reallocation, there's none, which is completely contrary to their past precedent. To kind of throw salt in the wounds for those that disagree with that position, they had this little kicker that they were not even going to consider commentary on this issue. So it's a remarkable thing, Todd. They said, on the matter that is clearly the most important part of the release, which is this issue of reallocation, the EPA said, we're not going to take or consider any commentary on that crucial matter. As far as I can remember, in the decade or so I've been following the EPA and all the regulatory pronouncements about these issues, I can never recall the EPA saying, we're not going to even consider comments on a crucial policy question. It's just absolutely remarkable and stunning.
This bit of text is part of the policy released by US EPA yesterday. However, it seems really odd, I would think, Scott, that it would not be up for open commentary, as is the rest of the policy.
Well, and I'm not even sure that they'll be able to get away with that under our administrative rule laws that we have in the U.S. It seems like that could be challenged in court, that it's easy to establish that was the most important policy decision that the EPA had to make for this rulemaking, and they basically said, no way, no how are we going to listen to anybody, and we're just going to charge ahead. I'm not sure that they will be able to make that hold.
One of your favorite sayings, Scott, is that the rule on ethanol is that Senator Grassley of Iowa rules. Can he rule here?
That's an interesting question. If the zero reallocation holds, then this will be a major defeat for the ag interest and Senator Grassley, because we will have gone to a situation where the small refinery exemptions function effectively as a form of general waiver authority for the EPA to roll back the mandates. And clearly, Congress did not explicitly give that authority to the EPA. So my view is, and again, obviously I'm not a legal expert, but I don't think that that will hold up in court. It's obviously going to be challenged, and I expect it to be eventually tossed out.
You wrote on Twitter, as it relates to this policy, if it were to be implemented in 2019, that it would eliminate the North Star of the RFS. That North Star, as defined by you, maybe by others, is the domestic forcing usage of biofuels in the United States gasoline supply.
That is, whether the EPA can zero out reallocation or not, there are lawyers who think that they have the legal right to do that. Even if they do, it clearly contradicts the legal North Star of the RFS, which is it is a market-forcing domestic blend mandate. That is the overriding North Star principle. So when there's conflict in the law, you go with the North Star. And it's easy to see that not reallocating small refinery waivers in particular directly contradicts that and gives the EPA a means to roll back the mandates.
Thank you for taking the time with us today, Scott.
Always a pleasure.
That, of course, is Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He joins us to talk about yesterday's announcement from the United States Department of Agriculture, rather, United States Environmental Protection Agency, as it's related to the RFS, or the law which makes sure that ethanol is used in the gasoline fuel supply. Frankly, it's making sure that biofuels or green fuels are used in the gasoline supply. We're now joined by Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State University to give us an idea of how well the ethanol plants across the United States are working. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with us. I know we're short on time. You've been looking at this on and off for years now. How comfortable are ethanol plants with the lower corn prices?
Well, they're comfortable with lower input costs, and that's mainly the corn, you know, in so many of our plants. Ethanol prices themselves have been kind of sideways to slightly lower, just so those grains have fallen off pretty dramatically. So in kind of a race to the bottom, it's a matter of which one gets there first, the revenues or the costs. In this case, the costs have been moving lower pretty starkly. And so we've seen, at least by our estimates there in the Iowa, western Illinois area, price for so far in June of about just under $1.40 per gallon, the cost of about $1.34.5. So that's about 5 cents profit. And so it's not a gangbusters great profitability picture of 20, 30 cents a gallon, but they are covering their costs. And that's probably an underestimation of what's happened the last several weeks as corn prices have fallen off so sharply.
And part of this, I assume, is because the price of corn is low, but the price of crude oil has been fairly high.
Yes. You know, on the energy side, we've seen, of course, ethanol prices, again, about $1.40, and surprisingly, they haven't fallen off that much. You've got this tension between RBOB and ethanol in terms of RBOB being a little bit stronger than the ethanol, and we just build up stocks of ethanol and have a weak price.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. We appreciate you being short with us today. We appreciate it, and talk to you in another month.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with K-State University. This is the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner is now here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, when you look across the planet, what's the most startling thing that has happened in the last week or so?
A couple of things, actually. One is that we finally got some rain to occur in parts of East Central Australia. That area, Queensland and northern New South Wales, had been months without precipitation of significance, and there was a lot of concern about getting the wheat and barley crop in the ground, and there's some canola that's produced in parts of New South Wales as well. And so we did get some rain. That was really nice, but as long as it's been dry there, they need a lot more rain. So there's some shower activity still lingering today and some more that will come up as we go into this coming weekend. It will help to ease some of that dryness additionally. So it looks like planting will advance a little better. The following week may be dry, though. And outside of that, there was also an interesting rain event that occurred in parts of China over this past week, and that produced some very heavy rain in a portion of the North China Plain, which is a very rich grain and oilseed and cotton-producing area. And rain totals in one night ranged from 2 to 6, actually local 8-inch amounts there, and really took care of the moisture deficit in that one province. But there's still other areas nearby that are running a little dry. And, of course, we're still watching Ukraine, especially eastern Ukraine, and from there into Kazakhstan. This area produces some corn and soybeans, as well as some wheat and sunseed, and all these crops are a bit stressed, to say the least. Top and subsoil moisture are running very short, and there's a lot of stress out there. Temperatures this week have been in the 90s to near 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and there's really still not much rain on the forecast charts for at least the next week to 10 days.
Here in the United States, do you see any similar heat stress coming?
You know, in the U.S., it's almost all roses right now, so it seems. We've had a lot of rain occur across the Midwest in this past week to week and a half. Some areas are actually running a little bit too wet right now. There's been some chatter about some wet weather disease issues in spring wheat country in the northern plains, while there's been some corn fields out there in parts of Minnesota and neighboring states of Wisconsin and Iowa that have some standing water. I don't think it's going to be a big deal. But the moisture shortages that we had a week ago in parts of Missouri and southwestern Illinois, portions of Kansas, have been temporarily eased. Now, we still have some dryness down deep in the soil there. We're going to watch this high pressure ridge that's advertised to develop next week and see exactly where it goes and how much punishment it might endure onto parts of the Midwest corn and soybean areas. Right now, though, everything looks pretty darn good for the Midwest, with the exception of those southwestern Corn Belt areas and a part of the Delta. And those areas will see some drying over the next 10 days, and we will see a little bit of stress at least come back into some of those areas.
Hey, thanks, Drew.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you that Friday morning we'll be at Assumption Fest at 8:30 a.m. for breakfast. That actually starts at 7 and runs to 9 o'clock. We'll be there on stage at 8 a.m. with Dan Zwicker, Kurt Kimmel, Ellen Dearden, and Kim Holzapfel to talk about the marketplace. Hope you can join us. It's free and open to everyone right there in the tent across from Sloan's.